Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. I'm so glad you're here. I'm actually doing this radio interview from Australia, from the wonderful state of Queensland. I've been in Australia for the last 2 months. It's coming to an end, unfortunately, and I've had a great time, and I've had an opportunity to meet some amazing people. So you're going to be sharing the experience with me of one of those amazing women that I've met on this journey. Before we do that, however, I just want everyone to be sure to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. I want to remind you that I have a great website, great information, three special reports. These radio shows always get sent out to people who opt in to that site. And my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, is another great place to just keep getting educated and filled with the latest articles and recipes and inspiring information that I come across. So that's all my way of supporting you in being able to step into that level of real knowledge and wisdom into your life. And one more thing, until the 24th, so there's a week left, I am creating what I call a healthy self a-thon. So my healthy self-a-thon is an opportunity to support all of my listeners, and I'm doing that by offering across the board a 20% discount on everything from my online store, which includes all my special products that I spent a lot of time researching, so I find the best, whatever's out there. It includes all my personal one-on-one consultations, which, by the way, are always done virtual, so it's through the phone or through Skype, and it even includes my very special types of testing, which is one of those tests is a nutrigenomic test that is life-changing. So check everything out there, and if you want to make 2017 a healthier year, then this is a way to support that intention. I hope you'll take advantage of it. So that's over at whatwomenmustknow.com. Okay, so let's talk about our topic today and my very special, special guest. We're going to be exploring the makeover mindset and how to start making a difference with Karen Smith. Karen Smith is a truly remarkable woman who is just having such an impact on this planet. As a survivor of the 2002 Bali bombing, along with many other challenges, which include the suicide of her de facto and the personal impact of the 2004 tsunami on her family, Karen's comprehension, values, time, creativity, and the meaning of life charges her presentations with passion, credibility, and a deep and genuine commitment to extraordinary achievements for people. She has delivered over 2,000 professional presentations for over 450,000 people in 7 years. Karen's message of inspiration has moved tens of thousands of individuals and organizations across the globe to make massive transformations and experience extraordinary results. She is the author of the best-selling book, Soul Survivor, and lives here in Queensland, Australia. And it's my total pleasure to welcome Karen to the show today. Hello, Karen.
Hello, hello, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and as I was saying at the beginning of the show, I've been meeting amazing people up here in the beautiful Queensland, Australia. So I was so blessed to have been introduced to you, Karen, and knew a little bit about your story, but I'm going to learn a whole lot more, along with all my listeners, about your work and how you are turning experiences in your life that some people would say are tragedies into a passion and a force to be reckoned with to really heal people and awaken people. So I'm just so thrilled that you're able to spend a little time with us today, and I know my listeners will be really inspired. It's a great way to end the new year and to begin a year of totally new possibilities, which beginnings of things always are. So this is a great way for beginning of the 2017 makeover. So let's talk a little bit, Karen, about the experiences that you found yourself in that have been so profound in shaping who you are and your passion and purpose in life.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, one thing I know is everybody has their story. Everybody has their journey that's brought them to where they are today. And, you know, I'm not really that different. For me, my main, I guess, the main life-changing experiences that found me was when I was, 31. So it was 2001. And my partner of 8 years, he worked in the movie industry and he had gone away to make a movie. He was the guy who, you know, he was this tower of strength, this incredible human being that I looked up to. And he made The Matrix. I'm sure your listeners would have heard or seen The Matrix and Mission Impossible.
Oh, my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah. Mine too. And so he worked on all those big budget movies, and he went away to make a movie called Kangaroo Jack up in Alice Springs here in Australia. And when he came back, he was a different person. And I never really got to understand what had happened or had taken place. But what I experienced was the 8 years that we'd been together, I was watching that relationship slip through my fingers without having any control or say or ability to reconcile or rescue the relationship. And after about, I think it was 11, 12 weeks after he came home, we were in quite a damaged state, if you like, from a relationshiping point of view. We were seeing a counsellor, and I was staying at my best friend Jody's place for a couple of nights a week while we were trying to work things out. But it was the 14th of October 2001 that he took his life. And I had a message left on my voicemail from him the night before. And I was staying at Jody's place. It was a Sunday night. And the morning came at 9 o'clock. I checked my voicemail and handed my phone to Jody and said, "Listen to this. What do you make of this?" And she said, "Just get in the car and go over there. Let's go." So where Jody lived was 5 minutes away from where Greg and I had our home. And when we got there, I was met by the police in our driveway. And the police officer handed me a CD and he said, "Karen, Greg has taken his life in your driveway last night, and your neighbor discovered the situation and called us." And he said, "You know, I'm assuming that this was about you. Greg was playing a CD in his car of Kylie Minogue's 'Can't Get You Out of My Head,' which was a really popular song back then. But it basically said, you know, 'Can't Get You Out of My Head, girl, your love is all I can think about.'" And he had that set to repeat. So he was listening to that for about 15 minutes before his life came to an end. And when the police officer told me, I fell to my knees, because, you know, you, when you go to school and you're growing up, you don't learn about how to deal with something like that. It's beyond our comprehension, and it's beyond our ability to actually even comprehend the suffering that comes with that or the suffering that was going on to cause that. That afternoon, I met with his parents, all of his friends, and I just had the most sickening feeling of guilt and responsibility. One, because of the way that the suicide message was left on my phone, but two, you know, the police officer confirmed it, and the police officer said, "You know, I'm guessing this was about you." So it was almost as if they told me how to deal with it and how to handle it. And at the time, I took it gratefully, because I really felt like I had been so conceited and caught up in my own pain about the relationship that I obviously never saw what he was going through, and how could I have missed that? So I found myself grieving to the extent that that grief turned to self-hatred. And as the weeks and the months went on, I hated myself more and more, and I couldn't stand the sight of my face when I looked in the mirror to brush my teeth. I couldn't bear the sound of my voice. I didn't want to be around anybody that would profess to love me or care about me, because I didn't deserve it. if I laughed or something was funny, I didn't deserve that either. Until finally I got myself so disassociated from reality, so disconnected from what was real in my mind. The only logical response was that I would take my own life. And not for one moment did it occur to me that I would be putting my family and my friends through what I was going through. All I thought was, number one, I would have paid my price for what I had done. Two, my friends and family would go back to being normal without having to worry about this zombie of a person in their life. And number three, I'd be back in my rightful place with the person that I love the most in the world. So it all made great sense to me. And on the 12th of October 2002, I boarded a plane to Bali. And my best friend Jody decided she was going to come with me, and another girlfriend, Charmaine, wanted to come. But, you know, they didn't know that I had sinister plans to take my own life while I was in Bali on the 14th of October, which was the same date that Greg took his life. But as fate would have it, the 12th of October, when we landed in Bali, was the night that the three of us went to the Sari Club in Bali. And, you know, it was strange because I had this incredible sense of peace, and I felt this incredible wave of completion come over me because my life was coming to an end in a couple of days, and so would my grief and my pain, and everybody that I loved, all of their grief and pain would come to an end, and everybody could just get on with living. That was the way that I saw it. But that night when we were in the Sari Club, it was almost as if fate had other plans, and the bomb went off at 11:30. Now, for those listeners who are not Australian, this may not sound familiar, or you may not recall, but on the 12th of October 2002, there was a terrorist attack in Bali aimed at the Australians. There was a bomb that was planted at the front of a club, a nightclub called the Sari Club, and then there was also another bomb that was detonated at the front of another club called Paddy's Nightclub. I was in the Sari Club. And the bomb that was created was actually a van that had been filled with pieces of wood, stone, nails, pieces of concrete, so that when the van exploded and detonated, and it was detonated with a mobile phone, when the van exploded, it would cause extra damage because of the debris that was contained inside of the van. And 202 people were killed that night. 88 of them were Australian. And as much as that was aimed at Australians, the impact was global. I was blown backwards onto the dance floor. When I awoke from my unconsciousness, I found myself covered in body parts and people and faces that weren't moving. And I heard this great screaming as loud as I could possibly imagine in between my two ears, beckoning me to get out from underneath wherever I was. And I started screaming back, and I managed to get myself out from underneath the rubble to survey the room to try to find Jody and Charmaine, but there was just no hope of that. I ran for my life, and I ran through flames. I climbed up walls. I fell down ditches. I broke my hand. I finally got out onto the street where there was the most horrific carnage that I've ever witnessed. And it's not something that I think that even any words can explain. I think, you know, words become a bit bankrupt when we explain human tragedy like that. But the moans and the pain and the death, it was profound, absolutely profound. And I found myself being picked up on the street by an Australian man on a moped. And I have to say, there was nothing more comforting than the sound of the Ocker Aussie accent, that when he pulled up next to me and he said, "Darling, you need to get yourself on the back of me bike. You're in a bit of strife." Oh, Cheryl, I can tell you, I was like, oh, God. Thank you for sending me somebody so familiar. And you know, his name was Jeff Smithers. And he put me on the back of his bike. He took me to the hospital where I sat waiting for 6 hours to be seen until finally I was sitting in a pool of my own blood because I had no idea, but the entire left side of my skull had been completely crushed and my brain was starving for oxygen. And there was one doctor trying to see to everybody, and he was an American guy. He was there on holidays, and they inserted 38 staples straight into my skull without any anesthetic. I never felt a thing. I heard it, and it was a dreadful sound, but I never felt anything. I guess there was this, it was a strange sensation that when I look back at it now, there was this feeling that everything that was me, my personality, all of the stuff got blown up, and then what was left was just this very heightened sense of awareness, very heightened sense of connectedness and sensitivity to everything and everyone around me. And I was in the hospital for 2 days, and then finally the Australian government put on a flight, a Qantas plane, to fly into Bali to bring people out, and I managed to board that plane and get myself back to Australia, where I was operated on immediately for 8 hours. And, you know, I was very fortunate. But while I was in the hospital in my recovery, my sister came to tell me that my two girlfriends, Jodi and Charmaine, didn't even actually survive. They never survived the bomb blast, and I was the only one out of the three of us that actually came home. 2 months later, Jodi and Charmaine flew home in pieces. They only found parts of their body, so we didn't get to farewell them in their completed state. It was Jodi's torso and Charmaine's leg and her arm. And, you know, there was a strange sensation that I grappled with after Bali that was almost euphoric, in that I remained in that very heightened state of awareness for about 6 months. But then after that, life kicked in and I had to pay the mortgage and put fuel in my car and, you know, move back home and sort myself out, and I got back into being a normal person again. And I guess I forgot that the sensation that I was left with, and I just got back into trying to recover. And it, you know, I was depressed for a good 6 years, and I couldn't really work, and I did have a couple of jobs, but I was really, you know, not worth employing. I was just a mess. I couldn't go to a lift. I couldn't hear a champagne cork pop. If a car backfired, I'd be in bed for 3 days. I couldn't go to restaurants or movies, or certainly not nightclubs or bars. I couldn't bear to be in confined spaces. I couldn't bear to be close to people. I couldn't tolerate loud noise. I really, really secluded myself to being just with my friends and family. And it was interesting to me, because it was a time where I felt, you know, God, I'd gone to Bali to take my own life, yet I was the only one who came home. How is that right? How is that even fair? And when I met with Jodi and Charmaine's parents and their families, I mean, how could I possibly have explained myself? And I struggled, because I felt that I was responsible for the death of 3 people now. And it was a real effort to reconcile that, you know, what I believed and perceived to be completely my fault was something other than that. That was very much a struggle. As much as everybody tried to tell me that it wasn't my fault and it was fate and it was always going to happen, etc., I couldn't come to terms with that. I couldn't agree with that. You know, if Greg and I hadn't been through what we'd been through, he'd still be here. And if I hadn't gone to Bali, Jodi and Charmaine would still be here. So it was a very, very challenging 6 years. And then finally my dog died of old age, and I rang my dad and I said, Father, I don't know what else to do. I'm beyond any more tears. There's nothing more to say. There's nothing more to do. I don't know what to do. And my dad called me Buffy, and he said to me, Buffy, he said, come and sit on Daddy's lap. So I flew down and I went to see my dad, and he said to me, you know, Buffy, he said, I want you to think about the humble little caterpillar. He goes about life bulldozing over a blade of grass thinking he's amazing, because he's got his belly dragging on the ground, and he bulldozes over a blade of grass and he thinks that that's life. But then things change his instinct kicks in and he begins to spin a chrysalis, and he has no idea what's coming his way. And as he spins that chrysalis, he's beginning to liquefy, transform, and go through the most hell that he could ever have possibly imagined for himself. And he said to me, "Buffy," he said, "your life is like that." He said, "Nobody can say that your life hasn't been hell." And he said to me, "But I want to tell you this." He said, "The fight of that little caterpillar's life is not while he's in the chrysalis. The fight of that caterpillar's life is what's coming next. The fight of his life is to burst out of that chrysalis and to become the most beautiful butterfly because of what he's gone through. Not to pretend it didn't happen, not to deny it, not to shut down, not to never talk about it. Everything he's gone through is what gives him his colors and his spots and his job. Is to spread his strong wings and catch the wind under his wings to get a different perspective on life." And my dad said to me, "Buffy," he said, "the fight of your life is to become amazing because of your experiences." And he said, "And you know, everything that you've been through will change the way you see the world. It'll change the color of the world. It will change what you know." And he said, "And your job is to do whatever you need to do with that." He said, "But you'll be soaring from a much higher perspective than the perspective that you were at before the bombing and before all of this grief." And that was the change for me, Cheryl. That was when everything turned around and I decided that instead of me crying in bed about how bad my life was, perhaps I survived for a reason. And I began asking a different question. I began asking the question as to why am I here? Why did I survive that? And if there's an answer, what is that answer? And it, you know, didn't come straight away, but it certainly did happen. Where I decided to start speaking. And I'm an accountant by profession, and I've worked in real estate for 10 years. So speaking was the furthest thing from what I was ready to do. But I really felt the need to pay homage to the people whose lives were lost and to really help with the awakening and the awareness of humanity that if I can go through what I've been through, people can go through bankruptcy, breast cancer, loss of a child, a divorce, a separation. You know, we can go through anything. And I guess the real reason I do the work that I do is to be evidence and an example of what's possible that shows the resilience of humanity. But I think more than that, even nowadays, is to really help people to see that we're not defined by our story. We're not defined by our experiences. In fact, if we are defined by our experiences, it's when we stop living. And when we're not defined by our experiences and we don't identify with our experiences, that's when we start living. So that kind of gives you my backstory and kind of and sort of fills you in on where I'm at and why I do what I do.
You know, it takes so much faith and courage to get to that place where you discover the greater purpose of all the trauma and suffering that went on in your life, as it is for every person. And it sounds like one of the greatest blessings you had was the wisdom of your father, who was, sounds like such an amazing being.
I'm so lucky that I have the most beautiful family. And you know, my dad is an amazing storyteller, and he's always, for as long as I can remember, he's always communicated with me through stories because he knew that that's how he always used to get through to me. But I absolutely agree with you. He was an absolute catalyst in that whole wake up. And then when I started to ask a different question, my brother and my sister and my mom, I mean, they just all rushed in. It was almost like such relief that I was starting to, you know, turn around and not be in such darkness. But, you know, during that time, I did the typical antidepressants and the counseling and, you know, that whole, the whole process that I guess took great recovery and repair later on down the track. So, you know, I mean, everybody's got to do what they've got to do.
That's right. We all find the healing path we need to take. And to me, what's really profound of the amazing story that you shared with us, and thanks so much for sharing it, is that moment when you asked a different question. Because
absolutely,
when you ask a different question, you get to see the world in a different way. And it really is important, and I'm sure you talk about this in the work you do. It's so important to ask a different question or to ask a question that opens up spaces of possibilities and not questions that can't be answered, like, why me, right? Why me? Why did this happen? You'll never find an answer to those questions. They don't move you forward in life.
It's so true.
So what were some of those questions, Karen, that started to emerge from within you that put you on this amazing path that has impacted so many people's lives around the world?
I guess the first question was, if I'm not going to lie in bed and cry about my experiences, what am I going to do instead? And instead of looking at what was wrong with what I went through, I had to look at what was right. And that was a very profound question for me, because that forced me to get out of the woe is me and it's been so bad and, you know, I'm so unique on this planet. Nobody understands what I've been through. And instead of me wallowing in that, it forced me to say, well, what was right about it? What if it was the best thing that ever happened to me? What nuggets, what gifts exist in this experience that I'm missing? What have I not seen? And it was really being able to go back and revisit the whole experience from that perspective and see every single step, every single conversation that I had, every person that I met, everything that I did was all a great awakening to the power that really was present in those moments. And, you know, I talk about this often. When we reflect on our experiences, that's when we have the, oh, my God, that was the worst. I can't believe I went through that. But at the moment something is happening, in the heat of the moment, in the moments that those traumas, whatever they may be, are unfolding, actually, quite the opposite is what is in existence. In fact, what I've found in my experience of working with, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people around the globe is that in our difficult times, when we're right in the middle of it, we're coping. And our strongest, most powerful version of ourself is the very aspect of ourself that's present. And when I went back to have a look at this about 5 years ago, I went back and I thought, I want to look at what I experienced, not from a physical point of view, but I want to remember what I went through psychologically. I want to know what I was thinking, because there was a time during the running around that there was a couple that had been severely burnt. And I remember I put my hand on their shoulder and I said, don't worry, everything's okay. I'm here now and I'm going to look after everything. And in my heart of hearts, Cheryl, I'm 5'2". And I am a weakling. So when I'm saying, don't worry, I'm going to look after everything, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. But when I go back to the sensation of when I said those words, I meant them with the deepest core of myself. And I felt like, and I'm just going to put it out there, I felt like I was God Almighty himself. And I truly believe that it's, when we talk about the human instinct for survival, I think we're playing it down, because the human instinct for survival is not human, it's superhuman. I'm 5'2" and I climbed a 10-foot wall, and I have no recollection as to how I did that. I tore apart great big wooden boxes and crates with my bare hands that I'd fallen into that were slicing my legs to pieces. I sat with the woman and caught her arm as her arm fell off her body before she took her last breath. There was no sensational feeling of fear or sadness or terror. There was none of that. All that I can recall feeling was the greatest sense of focus, power, control, clarity. There wasn't this weak, lily-livered personality that gets frightened if I don't have enough money in the bank, or gets frightened if
you know, if I have a fight with my husband. It wasn't that personality of me that was present. There was something way bigger than me that was breathing me, or beating my heart and blinking my eyes. And I was aware of it, but it was in control of me rather than me being in control of it, if that makes some kind of sense. And I think it's been that revisiting of what the truth was rather than my recollection. Because when I remember, when I think about it, I become just like society, and I go into this, oh my God, that was terrible, and that was me. Jeepers, that was just a dreadful experience to have gone through. I wonder why me? I can go into all of that. But when I actually go back and revisit the experience and look at the reality of what was happening, although, I mean, it was horrific for sure, but who am I to say it was horrific? It's not for me to say. It's only for me to experience what was there and to experience myself inside of that and to witness myself inside of that and to see, well, hang on a second, like there is a superhuman aspect of me that I need to know more about. I need to shake hands with this aspect of me. I need to come face to face with it, because it was a part of me that, if that part was present 90% of the time, my life would be extraordinary. So I want to find it, figure it out, become its best friend, and have that aspect of me come out to play day by day. And I guess for the last 5 years, I've devoted myself to really mastering that aspect of myself, and now sharing that with other people around the world as to how to master this inner world, so that then the outer world becomes a reflection of the very things that we want, rather than life being quite random and hoping for the best.
So what are your suggestions, recommendations, or action steps, whatever you want to call them? What is it that you inspire people to do, to tap into that place where we are truly our most powerful, unlimited self?
So there's a couple of steps that we can take to kind of to really get a sense of what it feels like, or what that higher self feels like. And the easiest one, we've been hearing about it from Eckhart Tolle for a long time, and that's presence. And one of the things that I do, it's quite funny, but one of the things that I do is I really encourage people to just do this little imagined vision, where you imagine right now that you're up in the sky having a conversation with the powers that be, and you say, I want to come down to the earth. And before you know it, they kick you out of the starry sky and you start plummeting down to the earth. You land in the body. You land in this body. And you know, everybody, as you're listening to the show now, just look at your body. Look at your legs and just say, I've just landed in this. Imagine if I just landed in this body right here, right now, what's in front of me. And in that moment, you just become very present to yourself in the body, and specifically what's in front of you, rather than thinking about what was just happening or what could potentially happen, rather than thinking about yesterday or tomorrow, rather than trying to fit what I'm saying into your own frame of reference, rather than doing that. Just try falling out of the sky and landing in the skin that you're in and being completely present to the sound of my voice. Just be completely present to the sound of my voice. Don't make any judgments. You don't need to. You just landed in this skin. There's nothing to judge. You've got nothing to judge it up against or compare it to. Just be present. Just be present to the sound of my voice and the fact that you're listening to this amazing show with Dr. Cheryl Selman. Just be present to that. And the moment we do that, it becomes very quiet between our two ears. It's almost like an instant of meditation, if you like, but with our eyes open. And then another way, obviously, is to meditate. Some people find that really challenging. So if you do find that challenging, transcendental meditation is a really magnificent tool to add to your kit bag, because it really teaches you gently how to get into that place of nothingness between your two ears. Or alternatively, just, you know, get present. Just totally focus on what's in front of you right now. Take a deep breath and just focus on what's in front of you right now. And just imagine that there's a big steel wall on the left side of you, and behind that steel wall is everything that's in the past.
And then on the right side of you, imagine another huge big steel wall. And on the other side of that wall is everything that's in the future. And you can't access either of them. You can only access what between those two walls and right in front of you in that tunnel. And the more we can bring ourselves to the present moment without a past or a present, what we have is wisdom in the moment. Because our experiences, they give us wisdom. But unfortunately, when we don't, when we're not present to the existing moment, our past gives us identity. It gives us a way of being. It gives us a set of beliefs. It gives us things that we think we know about life. And it's all made up. It's all a perception. Doesn't matter what has happened in our lives or what our experiences are, the way that we relate to those experiences, I would relate to them differently. So if my perception is different to your perception, it means that neither of us are holding the truth. All we are holding is the perception. So if we want to hold a perception, by all means, go ahead. But the moment we hold on to a perception or a belief about something, then we're pinching off the flow of anything else that is possible from that set of experiences. So while ever I believed I was unworthy, I shouldn't be here, that my life wasn't worth living, while ever that was my perception as to, you know, my experiences, and I wasn't capable of experiencing anything other than that. I pinched off the flow of anything else. But the minute I let go of that perception and I opened myself up to say, well, if it's not that, and if it was right, what would I be, what possibilities would open up for me? And, you know, as a result, I've gone on to become a professional speaker and author, and I run events and I travel the world and I work with hundreds of thousands of people, and it's the most magnificent existence that I'm so grateful I survived to experience. And for those that have had health scares or, you know, have had their own life-threatening situations, you kind of get a taste of what it means to actually be alive. You become more present to life than ever before. And I think that it's in that potency that and that presence, the potency of being present, that you get to feel what it feels like to just be the quiet, authentic, congruent you. And the more time you spend in that place, the more time you get to know it. And then all of the fears fall away, all of the beliefs fall away, all the stories fall away, all the identities fall away. And I kind of like to say you're left with nothing. But from nothing, everything is possible, you know, like the texture and the richness and the color of life. You want to go and feel sad, go feel sad, but know that you're doing it. Don't be unconscious. You know, we're the only creations on the planet that have the ability to behave consciously, yet 90% of our behavior is unconscious. So that, and that unconscious behavior and that unconscious thought processes, what starts in the mind manifests in the body. So when we've got illnesses in the body, it started in the mind because the mind is feeding the body constantly. They're so connected. And then what happens in the body goes back up into the mind, and then it becomes this circular drama. And, you know, the invitation that I want to give to everybody, regardless of what's going on in your world, is to just really give yourself the gift of presence and put a rope around your wrist or an elastic band around your wrist or something that's going to remind you throughout the course of the day to just bring yourself back to the present where there's no past and there's no future. There's just what's in front of you right now. And just be with that and be with the nothingness. Just get used to the nothingness, because from the nothingness, you can choose anything. You can choose happiness. You can choose sadness. You can choose excitement. You can choose sleep. You can choose eating. You can choose play. You can choose rich. You can choose poor. You can choose anything. But if you're unconscious about your life, you have no say. And then life is random. And then we wonder why we get to the end of our days and look back and wonder why life was never the way we wanted it to be.
It's, wow, what can I say? You know, I'm listening to you, and I know you're that past that doesn't exist anymore, but has made you who you are and has allowed you to tap into this great truth. So many people speak it. It's available. You can read the books. But, you know, Karen, when you meet someone like yourself who has had that experience, who has gone to the depths of despair, and then something happened that the chrysalis, you know, the moment came when they were able to move out of that chrysalis, out of that darkness that contained this transformational energy. It's so powerful in touching people's lives. I mean, I feel that message. I'm sure my listeners feel that message. It's like, it's real. It's authentic. It's coming from a frequency that gets to us. And it's not the words, but it's the experience that you have, that you embody, that knows, you know, you've been there and it's you now. It's you. You speak there. You probably don't even have to say anything anymore, Karen, because it's that presence of yours that touches people. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense to you. You know,
oh,
it's what you
beautiful.
Become. Yeah. You know, and it's such an important message, or it's such an important frequency to hold at this moment in time, because we live in a world that has generated so much fear. And we're all constantly surrounded. If you're living a normal 9-to-5 life and turn on the news and read the newspaper and, you know, just watch the billboards, we're living this 9-to-5 life. And you're here in the world right now reminding people by your – this is just, you know, my take on things, but what I experienced from you. But you are this little butterfly that flaps its wings, and the motion of the wings and those frequencies that go out awaken people to themselves. What a gift you've been given in this lifetime. What a gift you are to the planet, to everyone that encounters you in whatever way. Even now, through your voice and through your stories, which you tell so well, and with such, you know, with such power, people are being transformed. It's just, you know, you're very blessed to have this beautiful mission in life.
You know, I have to say there was a time where I may not have seen that, but I'm so grateful for what you've just said, because I really do feel that my life is such a gift, and I feel so blessed, and I feel so lucky that I did survive, you know, and that I've come through it. And I feel so fortunate. I did another interview last week, and the interviewer said to me, "Tell me quickly one thing you're grateful for immediately. What is it?" And I said, "Oh gosh, okay, I'm really grateful that I've got a brain that's just so clever." And I remember, and I was just thinking about that then. I think, you know, I'm very, very grateful that, you know, the brain that I've got is a brain that is constantly in search of the next level of its own awakening. And
because that's
the
question.
That I have,
right? That's the question. That's the question you keep asking. And every time you ask a question, the universe opens up with answers. So
you know, right?
So you're on this never-ending, expansive journey, as we all are, if we ask the right questions. I so truly believe that where we put our focus is how we are, you know, where we put our focus is what is allowing possibilities to emerge.
Mm.
It's kind of a quantum physics concept, you know. So true, though. So powerful.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, your book that you wrote is called Soul Survivor. And for people who haven't seen that title, it's O-U-L, survivor, soul survivor. So what does that mean to you, Karen? Why did you use that word?
Because the way that we, when we look into ourselves, we can see that we have a personality. But most of us also feel like there's a soul in there. There's a deeper part of ourselves. There's a deeper part of ourselves. And I really felt when I wrote the book that it wasn't my personality that survived, because I'm completely changed. Like the person that I was before Bali and the person that I am today, you would never recognize them. And so my personality was completely changed. My body completely changed. My spine completely rotated. You know, I got some x-rays and I'm always getting chiropractic treatment and so on. And I got some x-rays the other day and, you know, my first two vertebrae up at the top of my skull are completely twisted to the side, totally twisting the brainstem. And so the body in and of itself, the broken hand, the broken skull, all the other stuff that's gone along with it, the body is not the part that's the survivor. The part that has gone on to make the most profound impact is the soul. And I really feel that soul's connection to its source, and we can call that God, we can call that universe, we can call that whoever or whatever we want to call that to, but it's the power, it's the innate intelligence that beats our heart and breathes us and bakes a baby, blooms a rose. That innate intelligence that the soul is connected to, that's what pulled me through the experience, and that's what continues to pull me through my life and has me survive everything to the point where I thrive. And I felt like, again, when I wrote the book, it was really homage to that higher power that gave me the taste of such a rich and texturous experience with so much color, and also gave me the resources to make my life to put my life in service of the rest of the planet. Because I have no other desire. There's no other desire inside of my skin than to be of the most profound service. There's nothing else that I'm here for. You know, I don't have kids. I have a beautiful relationship. I have two gorgeous dogs that I adore. And the beautiful part about that is that I can travel, and I do. And, you know, I live my life 100% in 100% service. And I can't imagine another existence. It's not for me anyway. Beautiful. It's a real gift. Mm. And you were so spot on. It is a real blessing. What a treat. I mean, what an honor, hey? I'm marveling at it. Actually, Cheryl, now as we're talking, I'm marveling at it.
As you should, because that's what you're left with, is the awe of who you are and what you're here doing, really. It's like, what else can you say?
What else can you say?
Great things. but I wanted to ask you about your programs, about, you know, your website. We need to tell everyone about your website, and it's Karen, C-A-R-R-E-N, Smith. So it's Karen, C-A-R-R-E-N, Smith.com. But in the time we have left, Karen, tell us about your programs, what you're doing, how people can learn more, take advantage of either your speaking engagements or what else you're creating.
Yeah, well, I do speak all around the world. So I basically go wherever I'm called. I also have some online programs, and given that, you know, your listeners are all around the globe, a really cool online program that I've created is called The Effortless Self, and it's a 7-part video program. There's also an online forum that I contribute to and chat with, But each of those videos is specifically around getting to that place of effortlessness. I think humanity has gone through some hell and some serious hell over the generations. But I think that there's a big groundswell of awakening where people are starting to look for another way, because the way that we exist as humans is unsustainable, not only from an ecological and an environmental perspective or a humanitarian perspective, but I mean from an internal, individuated perspective. It's unsustainable. The way that we get up in the morning, brush our teeth, go to work, come home, make dinner, go to bed. Get up in the morning, brush our teeth, go to work, come home, make dinner, go to bed. And life is this continuous routine, and we're in constant search of happiness. But that searching for happiness is the very thing that's robbing us of our happiness. And there is an effortless way to earn money. There's an effortless way to relate to your family. There's an effortless way to experience health. There's an effortless way to experience expansion. There's an effortless way to experience yourself. There's an effortless way to experience love. And from this very expanded perspective, each of the videos in the Effortless Self program really bends the mind and takes you to places that you've never considered before. So that program is absolutely available on my website and also at theeffortlessself.com. You can get access there, or you can just simply reach out to me through Facebook. You know, there's the Karen Smith Facebook pages. It's CARREN and then SMITH. Karen Smith, you can find me on Facebook. Send me a friend request. Send me a message. Send me a question. You can email me at info@karensmith.com. Just make sure that you make a note that you've, listened to the podcast, listened to the radio show, so that I know where you've come from. But, you know, there's lots of different ways that you can reach out to me to find out how you can be exposed to this level of enlightenment, I guess, this level of learning and this deep connected mastery of the inner self. Then the world, the outer world, becomes a reflection of what you want. And I am traveling a lot in 2017. So 2017 is the year of the United States for me. So I plan to be in the States at least three times, touring through LA, through New York and Florida, Toronto, definitely Canada. There'll be some tours around Australia next year as well, obviously. But, I'm really looking forward to a really exciting year of being able to reach more people. I figure if I've reached 500,000 people in 7 years, I can reach 500,000 people in 1 year. I can do it. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure you will reach your goal. And I know that, you need to be getting out there with your message. I have no doubt you'll have a great, successful tour, U.S., Canada.
Thank you.
Of course, Australia, which is guaranteed. But, you know, Karen, I'm just so grateful for being here today. I'm so grateful for sharing your story. And just so grateful for the inspiration that you bring. And it's like reminding everybody about who they are. You just have this ability to just remind us of our real powerful self and not to get lost in our story, but to really emerge as the powerful being that we have and use everything that's going on in our life and all our dramas. We all have it. It's part of being human, some more, some less.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all grist for the mill of awakening to who we are, to that powerful place that you tapped into, that you share with people. So I'm very grateful for you and certainly for sharing time with us. It's a great way to enter the holiday season and to begin a new year. So I hope everyone will go up and visit your site, KarenSmith.com. Become the effortless self this year. That's a good goal for 2017, so you're helping to guide people there. And just wishing everybody who's listening the joyous and happy and fulfilling and loving and grateful holiday season, and know that 2017 is the time when phenomenal things are waiting for you. Just ask the right question. Just ask the question that'll move you to where you want to go. That's such a powerful message I've gotten from your conversation today, Karen. So thank you again for being with us. And I just thank everyone for being here on the show. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.